This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
When the pandemic struck, there was a tremor through Western society. Would the supermarkets be restocked? Seed companies and supplies of baby chicks ran out overnight and stopped taking orders. Maybe we should produce some of our own food. And then when hospitals become overloaded, fearful places with the pandemic, other illness can go untreated. What could we do for ourselves at home? What a perfect time for a book showing us all how to grow our own groceries and tend to small family medical problems. What a perfect time to have homesteader and natural medicine woman Marjorie Wildcraft back on Radio EcoShock from East Texas. Marjorie Wildcraft, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me back on again. It's truly a pleasure.
Well, the last time we talked in 2017, a couple of hurricanes just roared through Texas and the South. And last winter, most of Texas lost power for several days during a cold snap that seemed pretty mild by Canadian standards. And now we have the pandemic. Could there be stronger signs that we need to be prepared to get through strange times?
I would say so. And I would say the biggest thing that's facing, you know, not only Americans, all of North Americans, but globally, is inflation. And possibly the threat of hyperinflation. We know that our corn, our soybean, wheat, most of those crops, the prices have increased pretty dramatically, sometimes 200, 300%. People who are in the building industry are seeing that with the price of lumber and copper and those sorts of things increasing. It's countless the number of large companies, Kimberly-Clark, Coca-Cola, General Mills, that have made announcements that they are increasing the prices of their goods because the raw ingredients are costing them more and they've got to pass those costs on. So in spite of Janet Yellen saying, no, don't worry, the rest of the world knows that inflation is here and food inflation will become a bigger and bigger problem going forward. Globally, we have a lot of problems with the supply chain that has not gotten fixed, and some of it is so big and systemic. You know, the ship in the Suez Canal was just one thing that, you know, that'll take some months to straighten out. But there just are so many other things that are broken down. The Grow Network, we're like a relatively small company, you know, in terms of the grand scheme of things. And we sell little herbal kits to teach you this and that and the other, or DVDs or supplies. And we wanted to sell all of our herbs in glass jars, specifically mason jars, because, you know, we really believe in recycling and reusing, and we don't want disposable packaging. And last year, we could not buy mason jars. We have not been able to buy any mason jars since last July, and we really didn't want to put the herbs into plastic bags. Most herbalists are really against that. They really think that they should, you know, glass is a much better container. But we're even having a hard time getting plastic bags, not to mention we're having a hard time getting the herbs. So, you know, even if a little company like mine is struggling getting supplies and handling this, and the big company, it's rampant throughout the whole supply chain. So we do have some really big problems that are not going away, and this is really a good time to have some more self-sufficiency.
Yeah, we can lean back from agribusiness and big pharmacy with a little bit of effort and self-education. So you've got a new book. It's called The Grow System, The Essential Guide to Modern Self-Sufficient Living, From Growing Food to Making Medicine. I'm wondering, does this book build from that phenomenally successful DVD series you put out, Grow Your Own Groceries? I got that. I watched that. I actually put a great big water container outside our house to collect the rainwater and changed my compost system partly because of you.
Oh, thank you. Actually, this book, we realized that video was awesome, and it did. It shocked me how many people loved that. But the primary feedback I got from that was people were really, really just beginners, and they said, could you simplify it? So the book is actually an attempt to really simplify things. So since then, we've developed what we call the Grow System, which is just a three-part system that shows you how you can produce at least half of your own food in a backyard-sized space with a 100-square-foot garden, a small flock of laying hens, and a rabbitry. And we show you step-by-step how to implement those things. And I even go through the number of calories, you know, a typical medium-sized egg has 60 calories, and, you know, a flock of six chickens can lay 1,500 eggs, and that's almost 100,000 calories a year. So I show you, you know, and I show you what it looks like from day to day, how to operate that, and what size chicken coop you have, and where the plans are to build it. And, you know, we really take you step by step on how to produce half of your own food in a backyard size space. And then we go through a little bit on home medicine, and again, starting very simply from people who have never done anything with the seven stages that you go through as a medicine maker, the eight preparations that every home medicine maker knows, and then how to get started, which is, you know, what should be your first herb or two to start with. So it really is a book that's targeted more to beginners, because we found that was really the need. And, yeah, but thank you so much for the comments on the DVD. It's still a classic.
Well, speaking of gardens and ground, I notice and I feel in my heart that I'm healthier when I have my hands in the soil. Do you think grounding, also known as earthing, is a real thing for good health?
It's a real thing, absolutely. Having your bare feet on the ground. Lots of women notice that when they're digging in the dirt, their nails are stronger. And there actually is a direct connection between your gut microbiome and the soil. They're very, very similar entities. They're microbiological entities that help basically digest and get nutrients moved around. And, you know, there's actually quite a few people that recommend you just eat raw dirt because of the biology that's in it is similar to what you need in your gut. So, yeah, absolutely, that the soil is... It's so much more. People think, oh, it's just dirt to hold the plant up, and it's something I don't want in my house, right? No, no. There's so much more going on with soil. So, yes.
Yeah, my buddy across the street, Joe, he's been gardening in the same plot since 1960. So what he does is he takes about a seventh of the garden, digs a great long trench, and all his neighbors come over with their lawn clippings and their backyard leaves that they don't want, and they fill up his trench. He puts the dirt back. And so 1/7 of his garden is replenished each year. But even so, he lost about 2 inches of soil over 40 or 50 years.
Really? Huh. Wow, that sounds like a great system. You know, I have been to Mexico to visit the Tarahumara Indians, who are the world's fastest long-distance runners, these guys. And they're also really famous for their longevity. And a couple of things struck me, and one was they didn't accept someone with our group had brought a bunch of corn that they bought from the grocery store, and they would not accept it. They very politely declined it, and they said, that food, it's not going to fuel us the way that our own homegrown corn is going to fuel. And I went to visit. I particularly wasn't going there to run. Oh, my God, no way. But I was going there to talk to them about how they grew their food. And we went to fields that had been in production for centuries. And Juan Sencio in particular was the farmer who was operating it now. And he knew of his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather that had worked that particular soil. And they used goats. The kids would herd the goats during the day up into the hills, and then at night they would pen them up in a pen, and they would collect all the manure from the goats that had been there overnight. So they were basically collecting minerals from the surrounding mountainsides, and then they would apply that goat manure to those fields. And they had that dialed in so successfully that really for centuries they had been growing corn every year there. So, gosh, it sounds like your neighbor Joe has a really good system, but well, maybe he needs some more or something, right? I don't know.
Well, he fed 6 or 7 kids partly from that, so I think he did pretty good. Now, I'm thinking of my listeners here, Marjorie. There's a whole crowd of people who have a few acres and the desire to grow food, but there's an ocean of folks living in apartments or condos downtown, hardly any access to a patch of ground. And in between, we have a lot of people in suburbs where the big crop is lawn grass, as you know. So
yeah.
Who can participate in this grow revolution? That's what I'm asking. And who gets left out?
Well, everybody can participate in it. And this book is actually targeted more toward a suburban type lawn, so a small backyard type place. In fact, you can have chickens, rabbits, and a garden in about the size of a 3-car garage, right? So I've really dialed these systems in to be able to grow them in small, compact spaces and yet do it in a way that you know, healthy and beneficial for the animals and the plants, that you're not overdoing it with crowding. Obviously, if you have more space, everybody's going to be a little more comfortable, but you can really grow this in a backyard, and that's what it's targeted at. But we do have a lot of people in condominiums and apartments, and there's a lot of the classic answers to that of, you know, community gardens, you know, get a space. There's a lot of guerrilla gardening of, hey, is there a vacant lot over there? Can you use that? There's resources on the web now. Shared Earth is a website where you can go, and it connects up homeowners with backyards they're not using with people who want to grow food. But there's also a lot that you can do. There's the traditional, you know, growing things on a windowsill or a balcony, or even just growing sprouts in your house, which really doesn't even require any sunlight. I'm actually thinking of getting some quail and doing them inside just as a demonstration that you could actually produce quail, which are meat and eggs, in an apartment, partly grow the fodder for them, which are just sprouts, and then, of course, you know, feeding them feed. They're, you know, delicious little birds, and they make these great little super nutritious eggs. So there's lots of things that you can do, and I'm also a huge proponent of, you know, when you just set your mind and your intention and you open your heart and you go, I really want to grow food, and you ask the universe for help, it's astonishing the resources that will come to you.
We got some hens that were 14 weeks old back last March. And they were hard to find because everybody wants to raise chickens all of a sudden. But we got the 14-week-old hens, just as your book suggests, because the chicks can be tricky to take time to know how to do that. Now we're getting 3 eggs a day. We can only have 3 chickens due to our municipal bylaws, but that's plenty. That's as much as we can keep up with. We end up giving away a dozen every now and then to our neighbors.
Nice, yeah. I actually normally recommend people have, if you have the space for it, to have 6 hens. And part of it is because they're flocking animals or creatures, and they're always worried about safety and security. And when you have 6, then one person, you know, one hen is on duty looking while the others are eating, and you can divide it 6 ways. And if you have, it's terribly cruel just to have a single chicken by itself, right? Because then it has a hard time putting its head down eating while it's worrying about its own safety and protection. But you're absolutely, they're so prolific. I mean, a hen in her best laying years is going to produce about 250 eggs a year. That's a lot of eggs, you know. You're right. Yeah, you'll end up, that's the great thing about it. You'll end up giving away a lot of eggs. You'll end up being super popular at potlucks with all those deviled eggs, you know. Who doesn't love a dozen fresh eggs from somebody's backyard as a gift, right? Incredible food.
With those golden yolks that you just can't get in the supermarket. Back in 2011, I interviewed an original urban homesteader, Jules Gervais, and in California with a family to feed. He took a standard urban lot. It even had some concrete all over it and turned it into a year-round food growing place and then a commercial success. And I've been growing backyard food for decades, but in your book, I was inspired. You want folks to take it farther to the neighborhood and then a community food web. Talk to us about those next steps.
Yes, absolutely. We have to absolutely have to rebuild the local food shed. I call it a food shed. We have to. It's we're so dependent on the big commercial agricultural systems, which we're seeing are breaking down. They're providing, they're not growing nutritious food, and they're hugely polluting. I believe, after looking at this for a long time and living in different aspects of community, the best thing is for each family to have its own individual garden for the more immediate things, you know, the salads and the greens and whatever their particular tastes are. And then calorie crops are actually really, really better suited to growing as a community. And what I mean by calorie crops are potatoes or corn or root crops, you know, the things that generally are big starchy calorie type things. And the reason they're so good to grow in community is normally you need a bigger space for them, and they tend to need a lot of hands all at once in short bursts. So when you're planting, you need everybody there, you know, and then you need everybody to come back a few weeks later to maybe do some weeding, and then everybody maybe to come do some fertilizing, and then another weeding, and then when you do the harvesting, you know, it just makes sense to have a lot of hands helping out. But also, you know, growing calorie crops together, oh my gosh, you know, the bonding and the relationships and it's valuable, meaningful work for everybody at every age, you know, even from the little kids all the way up to the elders. For me, it's something I think that all of us have really been hungering for anyway for a long time. So I really encourage that, not only with just plants. For a few years ago, we had a project with three or four families where we all came together and we raised a big flock of meat chickens. And, you know, we had the land, somebody else paid for the chickens, and everybody contributed for the feed and helped out at different stages of it. And we all came together to do the processing. And then, you know, we divided it up and everybody had organic free-range chicken in their freezers that we did, came together as a community to do. And those really, those kind of things are what makes life worth living, you know, I feel.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. You are listening to homesteader, homegrown expert, and family medicine woman Marjorie Wildcraft. This is Radio EcoShock, and I'm Alex Smith. We're getting to your new book, The Grow System, The Essential Guide to Modern Self-Sufficient Living, Marjorie. And I admit to worrying about reading the next segment. There's so many quacks out there selling anything for a buck to sick people. A couple in Florida were just arrested selling so-called mineral water that was toxic as a cure for COVID-19. How can we steer clear of the fake stuff when we want to learn about natural medicine?
Oh my gosh, I hadn't heard about that, but it doesn't surprise me. You know, COVID-19 has caused all kinds of insanity from everywhere. Well, I would say, you know, go to somebody who's actually been doing this for years and years and really knows it. The system that we've developed, I've been living this for basically the last 20 years, and I've taught, gosh, at this point, hundreds of thousands of people. We have tens of thousands in the Grow Network who are doing the Grow Half system, and we have so many herbalists that we've created, you know, that I would just recommend you go with somebody you know that you trust. I totally get you about the there is a lot going on, and there's an explosion now of homesteading things and all sorts of stuff. People are definitely, it's mainstream to be a prepper now. You're no longer a tinfoil hat wearer if you're talking about the end of the world. So there is an explosion of that. But
well, what kind of problems have you solved with your own family?
Oh, my gosh. You know, with the herbal medicine, I suppose the most famous story, which is one we wrote in the book, was I got bitten by a copperhead snake, which is potentially a fatal snake bite. And we totally treated that at home very simply with home medicine. All kinds of, you know, conjunctivitis, which is an eye infection, tooth infections, lacerations, fevers, cold, hypothermia, all sort of coughs, sore throats. And then I'm really big on using herbal medicine. The best use of herbal medicine is just very slowly and gently and proactively. So a thing I love to do is make an herbal infusions out of deeply nourishing herbs and just drink that every day. So I'm naturally strong and healthy. And building your own immune system is actually the best medicine, right?
You also kind of turned me around in the garden department because you said we might learn to love our weeds. Well, I've got one, quack grass, I call it. It's an invasive grass by the root. I'll never love it. I always get rid of it. And the only animals I know that eat those roots are pigs. Chickens won't. But I have to give another weed a chance after reading your book. I never knew the pesky mallow plant could be good for me. What's your favorite medicinal plant, Marjorie, that we could have in our gardens?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I have to say one of the most common ones that I love the most, I love the mallow, too, by the way. I love those little, when it makes its little seed head, it's kind of this little green wheel. Some people call them little cheese wheels. And you can eat them all the way from when they're tender green all the way to even when they harden up a little bit, they get crunchy. But one of my favorites is just the humble and lowly dandelion. It's just so common everywhere. The tender leaves in the springtime are wonderful to saute up as a bit of a bitter green. I love the bitter greens all throughout their growing season to take just a bite or two of it before eating something else, 10 to 15 minutes ahead of time, and that bitter taste will get your digestive juices going and help you digest whatever meal you're going to eat. And then the roots, roasted and ground, is a great coffee substitute. Oh, my God, you do not need to see me on coffee. It's not a pretty sight. I don't need more caffeine. So I like the coffee substitute of the roasted dandelion root. Yes, and then the flowers, oh, they're delicious when they're yellow, and then they're so much fun when they turn to seed and you can blow them. We call them wishing flowers, and you make a wish and you blow the seeds out, and the seeds will go plant your wish for you. So I love the humble dandelion.
Well, probably a lot of listeners are thinking, hey, I work long hours already, and some have kids to raise and hardly any time to become nurses or doctors, too. What does it take to decide to become a medicine woman or a medicine man for your own family or your friends?
The very first thing is just to make the decision you want to do it. And then I just did it by basically just whatever came up. I would just say, hey, I'm going to look and see if there's an alternative here that is got a solution in my pantry, right? So, you know, we've been out at the lake and falling off the inner tube, and the ears are all a little going wonky now. And then it turns out if you take a little bit of chopped garlic and soak some warm oil and then put those warm oil drops in the ears, it's a way better natural antibiotic than anything else, and you can totally either prevent or treat ear infections. And actually, sometimes, Alex, you know, I get on a radio show and some people call in and ask me questions about this plant or this ailment, and I really, all I can talk about are the things that have come up in my family for the last 20 years, because that's how I learned it. You know, you got a bunch of different books and learn some basics, and then when something happened, that was like, okay, this is my impetus to learn about it, right? So you don't need to stress about it and learn 50 plants and go get a huge amount of certification. I would just say learn a few basic things, and then as they come up in your family, you know, try them. I really recommend also just trying it on small things. You know, for example, I learned a lot about poulticing and treating infections from small cuts and wounds or whatever before we tried to treat the snake bite. I mean, it will astonish you over the years how your skills and knowledge will grow and your confidence. One of the other stages of becoming a medicine man or a medicine woman is when you really get it about the healing power. Like a young woman who used to work for me, Casey, she had this terrible thing going on with her nose, and I can't remember whether it's MRSA or it was one of these really bad infections going on in her nose. She didn't have insurance, and she goes to the hospital, and they're like, oh, you don't have insurance, we're not sure if we're going to be able to treat this. And she's like, gosh, I'm not sure I can handle this bill. And she goes back home, and she says, well, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to poultice it up, like Marjorie said, and what can it hurt? I can poultice it for a day or two, because, you know, I'm going to be okay for that, right? And I don't have the money anyway to go get the medical treatment. So she does. She poultices it up, and like the next day, it's really, really better. And then they, you know, I mean, within a couple of days, she's totally treated this thing, and it healed. And she's like, oh my gosh, you know, that first feeling of, wow, you mean like this prickly pear that's growing on the side of the road over there is just incredible medicine, and I just totally avoided this whole hospital drama. So so many wonderful stories like that from friends who and people who have just, you know, that's one of the stages is when you really get it, that these plants have been medicines for thousands of years, that humans have been using these as medicines, and, we, you know, they didn't have drugstores and Walmart, you know, or Walgreens, you know, that people have used these for forever, and that they're still potent and effective today.
It is amazing. There have been medicine people for thousands of years, and you would think over that time that humans would have learned a few things that really and truly do work. But also, I was relieved to see you put in the book, look, if you break a leg or you've got something really a serious disease, go see a doctor, go to the hospital. It's not like you're against the medical system, as I understand it.
It's my plan B, and then I also, maybe my plan C or D, actually. Then I also do have a network of trusted healthcare providers. You know, I usually know an acupuncturist and a chiropractor and an herbalist or two, and, you know, like, you know, if something goes wrong, you do want to have, you know, I, like I said, I'm a home medicine maker, right? I treat minor things that come up in my family. And when something bigger comes along, I usually seek help outside. And yeah, the traditional, the regular medical system, I love going and getting blood tests. Actually, I'm just going to get some next week. the diagnostics are amazing, right? Like CAT scans and all these x-rays, like what they can see inside of you. Their treatments aren't always the best, but boy, do they have some great diagnostics. So, you know, don't throw the whole system out. But yeah, you know, I mean, let's look at strengths and weaknesses and everything.
You know what's strange is that while we've been talking, I usually have my cell phone outside the room, but it's inside the room by accident. And what is the call? It's from the British Columbia Emergency Management Test System. They're sending me this blaring warning saying, well, if this had been serious, you would have needed it. And I know that it's coming for the coming wildfire season that we have on hand here in the West, right?
Yeah.
So we really do have to sort of pay attention to that stuff. And all that brings me back to my need to store food. And I was glad to see you also had that in the book, that we need to make this a full season thing. And it just feels way better than money in the bank to have a lot of bottles of food down in the basement and big bags of carrots and sand and potatoes in their sacks. I feel rich when I've got that.
Me too. Yeah, there's nothing more enjoyable than going into your pantry and seeing the neatly lined up rows of green beans and different things that you've canned and tomatoes. Of course, the taste is phenomenal also. But yeah, having a pantry, especially a pantry full of homegrown food that I've stored, is amazing. But if you don't have that, then, you know, go out and buy some supplies. But it's really wisdom at this point in time. Like I said, you know, pre-2008, people thought you were nuts. You know, 2010, 2012, they started selling backup food supplies at Costco, and it started to become a thing. I think everybody is a prepper now, and I think everybody realizes. And Alex, quite frankly, I really, this decade is going to be very, very turbulent. You know, quite a few of the larger entities on the planet, like the World Economic Forum, is saying 2021 may be a year that may make 2020 look like an inconvenience. So Texas certainly has experienced that already. I don't know what's coming, but I do feel a whole lot happier and more secure knowing that I can grow food and that I've got some stuff stored up and I know how to make medicine and family and community are nearby and I'm doing meaningful work, you know. So that really is so much more important than money.
I agree. We've got to wrap this up now. Where do we find your new book and how do we hook up with this self-sufficiency movement that you help coordinate?
Yeah. You know, if you go to MarjorieWildcraft.com, the book is available there. And then we also have a whole bunch of other bonuses for you if you sign up through there. And when you go there, there'll be like all the options for Amazon and Barnes and whoever your favorite is. But if you go to MarjorieWildcraft.com and then we'll also get you hooked up on our newsletter. And we have a super active forums area with lots of experienced homesteaders from all over the world now. So that way there'll always be somebody in your region or a similar growing region that will know what you need to know. And yeah, and our newsletters are fun and we're really here to serve. You know, I've always known that something like this would happen and that's part of what we built the Grow Network for. So if you go to MarjorieWildcraft.com, that'll get you the book. And I think there's a lot of good stories in there. I tried to make it as entertaining, as informative as possible.
And I'll put some more links to all of that in my own show blog at ecoshock.org. Marjorie, it's always a treat to talk with you. Please come back soon.
I'll do that. Thank you again, Alex. Super appreciate you.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.